It is 8:31. We have live in the studios once again Maria Tomczyk with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
No job this morning. He's off in the East Coast somewhere. I seem
He's
to
on
remember.
A trip. Uh-huh.
East Coast heading up to Canada. And we will find out next week if he returns.
Yeah.
All right. So, in the meantime, we have plenty to cover. Starting out with a passing this week.
Yeah, this week, Roberto Maestas, the 72-year-old co-founder and former director of El Centro de la Raza, passed away. He was involved in a lot of different issues, from Latino rights to workers' rights, from Native American issues to the anti-war movement. He was a very active, sometimes controversial figure in the activist community, and he will be missed.
Yeah. All right. Moving from that on to some controversy, some major controversy at the Seattle City Council.
Yes.
Its president.
The City Council President Richard Conlon this week decided to sign his name on the mayor's blank line, where the mayor should have signed or was going to sign the draft environmental impact statement for the downtown traffic tunnel to replace the Alaskan Way Viaduct on Thursday. Mayor McGinn was outraged. He said, look, you know, I just got a copy of the environmental impact statement. I wanted a chance to read it through and do my due diligence to find out if there was anything in there that needed to be renegotiated or needed to be discussed with the state. And instead of allowing McGinn the time to do that, to essentially do his job as an advocate for the city of Seattle, Conlon stepped in and said, hey, let's get this process moving, and signed instead instead of allowing the mayor to do that. And so there's a question now. Was that legal? You know, McGinn came out immediately and said, I think that's a violation of the city charter, separation of powers clause, you know. And the city attorney kind of scratched his head and said, I don't know, let me look at that. So we're going to find out in the next week or two. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of headlines about it, about whether or not Council President Richard Conlon did was legal or not. But it's a clear sign of the split between the city council, that is the majority of the city council, and the mayor.
And supposedly Richard Conlon had bounced this off of Washington State representatives.
Mm-hmm. And they said, go ahead and do it, dude.
Do we know if a city council president has ever done something like this before?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Yeah. We'll find out, I'm sure. Coming days and weeks.
It was certainly a violation of something. I don't know if they're going to determine it was a violation of the city charter or not, but man, it's certainly a violation of trust, and it's just not right. What's Conlon going to do next? Start signing his name to Mike McGinn's checks?
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find that out, too. Moving on, speaking of checks or the lack thereof,
yes.
At the King County level, looks like some major cuts this week.
County Executive Dow Constantine is faced with a $60 million hole in the county budget. And, of course, the first thing to go, as usual, are the human services. And this week he announced that he was going to cut 100% of the human services money left in the King County budget. There's not much left to cut after years and years of cutting social services in order to balance the county budget. There's only about $1 million per year spent on social services. Most of that goes towards victims of domestic violence and rape victims. But county executive said, well, can't afford to fund that anymore. That's gone. So all of that money that went towards human services is now gone from the King County budget. What I find kind of interesting is we've got falling crime rates all over the country in recent years. And what was much more controversial is when King County Executive Constantine said, well, let's do a $7 million cut to the sheriff's office. Well, then people started screaming and hollering about that, and now we've got an initiative on the ballot coming up to impose a higher tax rate in order to pay for money for the sheriff's office, for the King County Sheriff's Office. And I think that's ridiculous given that there are greater needs in the community than that. So another $1 million down the hole, and human services cut not just to the bone, but cut completely from the county budget.
All right. Moving on to the Seattle Times had a poll
Yeah, this week there was a big headline in the Seattle Times, and the headline read, "State voters deeply split over whom to trust." That made me laugh. You know, first of all, you know, whenever somebody uses the word trust and combines it with anything in regards to politics, that always makes me laugh because voters know, you know, or they should know at any rate, that the word trust should not enter into it when you're looking at evaluating politicians and their policies. Basically, you have to be pragmatic and say, okay, if I vote for this guy, am I going to get some of what I want? What I found interesting is that the poll, which was commissioned by the Seattle Times and the Spokane Spokesman Review, both conservative papers, did use the word trust when they did the poll. I actually went online and looked at the questions that were asked, and the question, the first question that was asked after they start to get a sense of demographics, they ask you questions about, you know, what issues are you concerned most about, et cetera. The first specific question that the poll asked was, overall, which party, the Democrats or the Republicans, do you trust to do a better job in coping with the main problems the nation faces over the next few years? So they do use the word trust in the poll, which if I were taking that poll, I would say I would immediately ask them, trust, what the heck are you talking about? But even then, asking that kind of a question, it doesn't come out the way the Seattle Times headline says it does. You would expect a pretty even split between Democrats and Republicans. Well, no, the people came out in favor of the Democrats by 43% over the Republicans by 35%. That's not exactly split in my book. That's actually people who said neither one was 16%, a pretty significant number of people had the same reaction I did. And also the question assumes that most people are either Democrat or Republican, which ignores the very large number of people who call themselves independents because they simply don't support either the Democrats or the Republicans. But what I found very interesting looking at the results of the poll is where the real split is, which is and the question of, quote, which of the following do you think should have the higher priority for policymakers in Washington right now, end quote. And then the options that you're given are reducing the federal budget deficit or federal spending to create jobs. Now, that's very interesting because it fell out 48% thought it was more important to reduce the federal budget deficit, while 44% thought it was more important to reduce federal or to spend more to create jobs. So I found that very interesting. People are pretty evenly split over whether we should care about the deficit or not, or whether we should spend more money to stimulate the economy. And that's an issue that people should not be split about. People should be able to tell the difference between running up a little more debt, which is not going to be that big a deal for the federal government in the near term, versus letting infrastructure improvements fall by the wayside and letting people get kicked out on the street and you know, become homeless, or denying funds to victims of domestic violence and rape victims. People should be able to make that decision and be very clear that, no, the most important thing right now is to spend some money to help stimulate the economy to get things going again, because that will eventually take care of the budget deficit. And people should be very clear on what the cause of the budget deficit is. The cause of the budget deficit is a combination of the Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthy and a terribly high amount of spending on two unnecessary wars. People should be very clear on that, and apparently they're not. So that's where the real split is, and that's where the concern should be, not over whether people support Patty Murray or Dino Rossi, because this poll very clearly shows that Dino Rossi is in trouble. Patty Murray is doing pretty good so far. So I found it very interesting how that poll was reported, and it was, and also how it was taken. So we can move on.
Okay. Moving on to Margaret Swift decision.
Yeah, this week decision came out of U.S. District Court in Tacoma on the case brought by Major Margaret Swift against the Air Force. She was dismissed in 2004 under the military's don't ask, don't tell policy. Judge Ronald Layton ruled that the Air Force should give her job back, and they should do it as soon as possible. because she was dismissed with prejudice, is what they determined, that the military's don't ask, don't tell policy is meant to deal with supposedly, according to the military, is meant to deal with disruptions to military morale, trying to make sure that people's personal sexual preferences don't interfere with the job, when in fact nothing Major Margaret Swift did in her own free time had anything to do with the morale of her coworkers, that in fact her dismissal affected morale much more than her private life did. This comes on the heels of a California judge recently ruling that the don't ask, don't tell policy was unconstitutional, which means that going forward, if that stands, going forward, people, the don't ask, don't tell ban will probably have to be lifted. But it doesn't give any redress to people who were dismissed in prior years under the don't ask, don't tell policy. But Major Swift's case now is a blueprint for people who want reinstatement. If they want to sue the military for reinstatement, they can just look at her case and figure out how to do it.
All right. Moving on to national, starting with the Senate.
Yeah, the stuff that happened in the Senate this week. Speaking of don't ask, don't tell, that was military bill that included a repeal of don't ask, don't tell was one of a number of bills to join the Senate backlog for bills that will have to be heard after the November elections, because the Republicans filibustered and the Democrats couldn't get the 60 votes they needed to end the filibuster and bring the bill to the floor for a vote. That one, the military bill that included the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Also, the Senate Democrats gave up on the campaign finance legislation, which was a major piece of what President Obama wanted to pass this year. This is in spite of the fact that there are a number of abuses being reported by 501c4 groups who are supporting even specific candidates now for the elections. And this is after the Supreme Court ruling that basically removed all limits on corporate spending in elections this year. Senate Democrats also postponed a bill to deal with the expiring Bush-era tax cuts. We just talked about those, that at the end of the year, those tax cuts primarily for the wealthy are due to expire. And so Congress has been going back and forth on what should we do about it, what should we do about it. Folks should know how I come down on it. I think all of those tax cuts should be allowed to expire for all income levels. Just because the old tax rates were not that onerous, and we see what the effect of them has been, a massive federal deficit. We need to deal with that. And the fact that the tax cuts for folks who make less than $200,000 a year, or $250,000 if you're married, the tax cuts for the poor were not that big to begin with. The tax cuts for the wealthy were much higher. I think they all need to be repealed, and I think Congress should take no action on them at all. But I'm guessing after the November elections occur that's going to be the first thing up, and the first thing that Republicans will want to deal with is to pass a new bill that will make those tax cuts permanent. The Democrats are going to push back with a bill to try to reimpose the tax cuts for the poor, but leave the tax cuts to expire for the rich. So we're just going to see, now that post-November docket is getting pretty full, we're going to see which one of these bills comes up first. My vote is for the Bush-era tax cuts to come up first.
Aren't the Republicans spinning this, that the tax cuts on the rich benefit small businesses?
Well, yeah, they're saying that if you impose a tax increase on folks who make more than $200,000 or $250,000 if they're married, that's going to impact small business. When in fact the IRS says, well, the only about 3% of small businesses will fall into that category of paying higher taxes under that policy. And most of those small businesses are sole proprietors, mostly corporate executives, entertainers, hedge fund managers, and other consultants who earn over $200,000 or $250,000 if they're married. And the majority of those businesses have no employees. They're simply sole proprietors who report consulting income or report director's fees and so forth. Because their companies don't want to, they pass the income through to them because they don't want to pay income tax on it themselves.
Yeah, those hedge fund managers, they need some more breaks.
Yeah. And so you see who the real constituents are for the Republican Party. But this week Congress did pass a bill. They passed a bill to give financial incentives to small businesses, which a bill that would set up a $30 billion loan fund for small businesses, many of whom have been finding it very hard to get loans from major banks during the recent recession, because major banks are simply not loaning to small businesses the way they were before. It also included some tax incentives for capital purchases. That means purchases of equipment, furniture, computers, cars, trucks, that sort of thing. And it included tax breaks for commercial real estate companies to allow them to accelerate their depreciation, that is to expense capital purchases that they weren't able to expense before. And that's very interesting because that was a heavily Democrat-supported bill. And it kind of puts a lie to the face that the Republicans want to paint on the Democratic Party that they don't support small businesses, when in fact, clearly they do.
Okay. Anything else news coming out of the Senate or Congress that you wanted to touch on?
No, other than just want to talk a little bit about provisions of the new health care law that went into effect this week. We hear an awful lot about right now about the Republicans campaigning on repealing the health care legislation. Dino Rossi's made that a central platform of his campaign. And every time I hear it, I wince and say, over my dead body, you know, come on. And literally, that's what it would be. It'd be over the dead bodies of a lot of people who are not covered by insurance. Starting right now, insurance companies will no longer be permitted to exclude children because of pre-existing health conditions. So sick children will be able to get coverage under, will be able to get health insurance. Insurers also will be prohibited from imposing lifetime limits on benefits. So folks who have chronically poor health and use their insurance a lot will not be cut off after a certain number of years and a certain amount of expenses on their plans. Insurers will also be forbidden to drop sick and costly customers after discovering technical mistakes on their applications. I've heard that over and over again from people who said that because they put in a wrong number or they got a date wrong on their application, and they tried to use their insurance benefits, that the insurance company went back and said, sorry, you had a mistake on your application. We're dropping you, completely taking away your health insurance. It also allows coverage for children under 26 on their parents' plans. So that means folks who are, particularly for kids in college or in technical school, or for people, young people just starting out who are working in lower wage jobs and where they're not offered health insurance, they're allowed to stay on their parents' plans. It also establishes a menu of preventative procedures like colonoscopies, mammograms, et cetera, that must be covered without co-payments. And I found this interesting because just last year I needed to get an immunization, needed to get a tetanus, diphtheria, and whooping cough booster. And guess what? My health insurance plan wouldn't cover it. It was not considered necessary for an adult to get a whooping cough tetanus booster. And I found that to be outrageous. And insurance companies will now have to cover those without co-payments. And it also allows consumers who join a new plan to keep their own doctors and to appeal insurance company reimbursement decisions to a third party instead of just appealing it over and over again to the insurance company, who will deny it again and again and again. So some very important and very good provisions of the Health Care Reform Act are just now coming into effect, and it's just in time for the elections. I hope people keep in mind the benefits that they're getting from this when they're looking at which candidate to vote for, the candidate who voted for health care reform or the candidate who wants to repeal it.
Do you know if this also impacts long-term health care insurance? You know, the people that, for instance, my mother, mm-hmm. who's got Alzheimer's, is currently mm-hmm. getting coverage from a long-term
care policy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what whether it affects long-term care. My guess is that health insurance coverage is different from long-term care
okay.
coverage. but I'm not an expert on that.
Sure.
So.
Just kind of hoping that would be included. She has limits on hers. And
on her
which
amounts she can
run
use.
Out. Yes. Yeah. All right. Moving on. The FDA making some decisions this week.
Yeah, the FDA is on the verge of approving the first genetically engineered animal for human consumption. It would be a genetically engineered form of Atlantic salmon that includes a growth gene from the Chinook, Pacific Chinook salmon, plus a growth gene from the ocean pout, which is an eel-like fish that grows fantastically, whether it's in warm water or cold. This growth gene allows this genetically engineered salmon to grow at twice the rate of a normal salmon. So it's purely for commercial reasons that the company Aqua Bounty Technologies wants to introduce this genetically engineered salmon for human consumption. It's not simply, it's not to improve the flavor, it's not to improve the quality of the fish, it's not to provide any health benefits to the consumer, it's merely for commercial reasons. They are also, the FDA, what's interesting is the FDA is relying on flawed studies, really, to do this, to look at whether the fish is safe for human consumption. One of the studies, and this is very interesting, one of the studies shows an increase in potential to cause allergic reactions in people who consume the fish, but the study only used as few as six fish to do the study. So it's not a comprehensive, these are not comprehensive studies that they're looking at, and the studies themselves show problems with the fish. In addition, the company says that the fish will be raised inland in tanks, so there will be no there will be no possibility that the fish can escape and enter the wild. However, Aqua Bounty is just one company. Once this fish genetically altered salmon is allowed to be produced, there will be other companies that will want to step in and raise it elsewhere, and some may want to do it in fish pens, where fish routinely escape into the wild. Aqua Bounty says that the fish is genetically engineered to be sterile. However, their own studies show that almost all, but not all, of the fish are sterile. Some of them are able to reproduce. So there is a risk that it will escape captivity and reproduce with wild Atlantic salmon. In addition, the fish are being regulated under the process to approve veterinary drugs. So so most of the people sitting on the FDA panel are veterinarians who have no background at all in genetic engineering, have no background at all in genetics, and don't fully understand what the repercussions could be for human consumption or for human health. So I'm urging people to contact Margaret Hamburg, the commissioner at the FDA, who is in charge of this approval process, to tell her what you think about approving genetically engineered salmon for human consumption.
All right. And also this week, FDA had a decision on the drug Avandia.
On Avandia, the diabetes medicine. Yeah, an analysis of data pried from GlaxoSmithKline through a Freedom of Information Act showed that Avandia was responsible for an increase in heart attacks in patients taking the drug. This analysis was not done by the FDA. It was done by a third-party doctor who is a cardiologist. He'd seen some patients who were on Avandia who had developed sudden problems with their heart, and he was concerned about the drug. He pried the information out of GlaxoSmithKline, did his own analysis, and came up with, look, there is an increased risk of heart disease and heart attacks among people who take Avandia. And it turns out, after doing an FOIA request with the FDA, that they did, in fact, do the same study he did a year earlier, and they came to the same conclusion. Yet in 2007, an FDA advisory committee found that Avandia did increase the risk of heart attacks, but they voted to keep it on the market, not to warn patients or to remove it from the market. Even though the study estimated that from 1999 through 2009, more than 47,000 people needlessly suffered a heart attack, stroke, or heart failure, or died while taking Avandia. This week, European regulators voted to ban Avandia for sale in Europe, but the FDA, under pressure from these third-party studies, decided only that they would tell doctors not to prescribe the drug unless the patient has failed on all other diabetes medication, and that patients who are currently taking Avandia can continue to take it. That was the FDA's position. And I think that really highlights how weak the regulatory apparatus is here, not just for food quality, we've talked about this before, but also for the regulation of drugs. So literally, you can be eating poison in your food, you can be taking poison in your prescription medications, and the FDA thinks that's fine for you to continue to do so.
All right, moving on to international Afghanistan.
Yeah, in Afghanistan, it came out that the vote taken last Saturday for parliamentary elections was, as I was telling Jav last week, it was widely expected to be fraudulent, and as it turns out, about a third of the districts so far that election monitors have been looking at, there was rampant fraud. There was extremely low voter turnout reported by observers, by international observers and by news reporters in most districts, and yet suspiciously high voter counts in many of these districts, which reported results that exceeded 100% voter turnout in a lot of districts. The total turnout in Paktia province, for example, was 111.37%, which means there was a lot of ballot stuffing going on. In Paktika province, 3 of 5 districts reported turnout over 100%, and one district had 626% voter turnout. That I think that means that district is going to have a recount of some kind. I don't know what the heck they're going to do there, but 626% is just...
How did they even stuff that many ballots into that box?
Yeah, they must have grabbed every piece of paper they could find. I don't know. Many places reported not receiving ballot boxes or not receiving ballot papers or both. So people lined up to vote but were not allowed to because they just didn't receive the supplies. And I just want to point out that last year during the presidential election that a quarter of all the votes were thrown out because of fraud. So that was over 1 million votes. And this year it's probably going to be a lot higher.
All right, and very briefly, Bob Woodward has come out with a new book.
Yeah, Bob Woodward's new book, which is due to be released for sale next week. Review copies were sent out to various news organizations like the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they printed some articles. They wrote a little bit about it, but they treated it like it was back page information, really. But then the British press picked up the headlines and ran them as lead stories, and it was very interesting because they reported such things as the existence of a 3,000 member Afghan militia trained by the CIA, which runs operations in Pakistan to secretly assassinate men that they assume are members of Al-Qaeda. So things like that that were not considered interesting news here in the U.S. were front page headlines in the British press. I found that very interesting.
Talking as we do every week with Maria Tomchik with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State can be found online. You can go to www.eatthestate.org. And if you have any questions, comments, tips, or you want to tell us what you think of both the radio show and the online version, you can contact us at info@eatthestate.org.